Welcome to Books in the Freezer, a podcast dedicated to the deliciously disturbing world of horror fiction. I am your host, Stephanie, and I am joined by author Liz Caron to talk about her upcoming horror sequel, First Light, and to take us on a journey through music. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm a fan, so I'm just so excited that we finally get to do this.
I have been very excited about this episode and about reaching out to you to do something together for some time. So I'm glad it's finally happening.
I think I like saw an Instagram post from you like a year ago where you were like, hey, everybody, tell me what your final girl song is. And I was like, I'll tell you if you let me come on your podcast someday. I invited myself on this show unabashedly.
You know what? Sometimes that works.
Here we are.
Yeah. I loved Night's Edge, and I know like Rachel Harrison was just talking about it on our other like musical playlist episode that we did. But I mean, as someone who loves horror novels and vampire novels, it was just such a new take on it and just really delved into these complex relationships with really nuanced characters. And I think there's a reason a lot of readers have really connected with it.
Thank you. Yeah, and I was just gonna say, like, your episode that you did with Rachel where you all were talking about it in relation to the music, it like I was so just bowled over to hear that you A, dropped that title, and B, that like she chose a Japanese breakfast song to compare it to. I was over the moon. And like, I have so appreciated the support of this awesome community. Like, this is my first horror novel, so I wasn't really totally aware of just how rad this community could be. And it's just like, I just feel so lucky.
Yeah, people have really liked it. Was the plan always for it to be a duology from the beginning?
No. So this is kind of my dirty little secret. Is that like it? So it started, its genesis was a short story that I was just kind of cutting my teeth on the characters. No pun intended. And I realized I had, you know, there was some there, wrote the full novel during the pandemic. And like it ended the way that the novel ends, the short story did, and the novel ended the same way. And it was very final and very nihilistic and very just, you know, I think that was the headspace I was in at the time. I was just like, there's no justice and everyone dies. I'm sorry. Horrible. Anyway, so then when we sold it to Nightfire, my editor over there, Kelly, was like, hey, what if there were more, though? What do you say about that? And that's how we ended up with a duology. It was really just her kind of getting my wheels turning. And we immediately realized, like, oh, well, you know, there is this explosive twist ending. But I did leave a door open. Like, the vampire cult's still out there. They never caught this guy. And, you know, Mia has something to say to him. So that's, you know, I decided, like, okay, if we're going to do it as a duology, we have to open up the world a lot more and kind of just, like, break form. Whereas the first one was really intimate. The second one is just, like, just, you know, bonkers, banana sandwiches. It's all over the place in the best way possible, I hope.
I am really looking forward to it. My copy just came in a few days ago.
Oh my gosh, yay!
So I am excited to dive into it.
Knowing now you haven't read it yet, so that's good for me to know, because I won't do my spoiler soup, which I have been trying to avoid so much.
I'm sure that must be tough because you just want to talk about it, but it's like the book isn't out and not everyone has read it. And a lot of listeners might not have read Night's Edge and might be looking to start there.
I know. It's funny, actually, because a couple of the trade reviews that came out for First Light already spoil the ending of Night's Edge. So I've been like, you know, sharing them on my Instagram and what have you. And I realized, like, oh, crap. Like, if someone sees this review, it literally ruins the end of the first book. So if you haven't read Night's Edge yet, like, don't Google the trade reviews, because they tell you everything. Yeah. So I myself will try to be as spoiler-free as possible.
Well, if you had to describe or synopsize Night's Edge for listeners, how would you describe it?
It is a vampire book that is not a vampire book. It is a story about a young woman who grew up with a mother who had a chronic illness whose symptoms looked a lot like vampirism. Her mom was infected by a guy she was dating when Mia was 10 years old, and now it takes place 13 years later. Mia's in her 20s and she's trying to find a way to have a life of her own while still taking care of her mom and making sure her mom doesn't hurt other people in their community. And she's giving her blood every night, and she's been doing it for 13 years. And, you know, the cracks are starting to show, and she's wondering if she'll ever get to live a life of her own.
Just reminds me of all the feelings of reading the book again.
It's a lot of them. It's a heavier read than I think it was advertised as being. So there's been surprises, I think, for readers, both good and not so good, because it's, you know, you hear vampire novel, and I think that certain things and certain feelings and certain tropes spring to mind, and it's not quite what people are getting, but I think it has found the people who do really need it, and that means everything.
Yeah. I mean, I really loved it as this metaphor for this parasitic, toxic relationship.
I think, like, yeah, vampirism, like, in and of itself is about parasitic relationships. Like, you know, a more powerful being feeding off of someone who has less agency. And, you know, I think there's a reason we keep coming back to it culturally, because that ends up being a recurring theme for so many people for so many reasons.
And I also loved the way vampirism was explored in this universe, that it's acknowledged. There's a name for this vampirism. It's known, and there's even, you know, there's treatment centers that are alluded to, and society has found a way to coexist with this in a way, or at least adapt.
Yeah. I think that at the time I was writing it, you know, we were just kind of crawling out of the pandemic. The, you know, vaccine was becoming available, but you were still having to, like, take your temperature to get into a restaurant and, like, you know, test negative if you wanted to go to work or go to a wedding. And that was just our reality that we were living in for, like, 2 years at that point. And I was like, well, this feels very normal to me that in this world you would have to, like, prick your finger at the door to give them a drop of your blood to let them know you're not infected. It's like if Theranos actually had worked, like, yeah. Theranos would have made a killing in this world, because that's, like, the made up technology that is. Here, give you a drop of my blood and I'll tell you what disease you have. But that's how it works.
I love that. But we are exploring these two novels through three songs. You have, like, full playlists for all of your books, right?
Yeah, I'm just a playlist whore, and it's never ending. And it's been hard to narrow it down, but these are the songs.
On your Spotify Wrapped, did you get that one, I don't know, personality, the, like, playlist one, the playlist maker? Because that's the one I got too.
Yes, I got that. And I also got, like, your city that people think you're, like, what is it, that people have the same taste as you? I was in the Burlington, Vermont pocket. Were you
me
also?
Me too. I think it's all, like,
you've got Burlington, Vermont and Spotify. Like, if you listen to a lot of, like, Boy Genius this past year, they're like, oh, you must be from Burlington. Okay.
It's funny because we're in Pittsburgh and my husband got Pittsburgh. And I think if anyone had any metal, it was Pittsburgh, PA.
That's hilarious.
Just weird. I think they just randomly picked cities on Vibes.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I loved it. But I was like, oh, where are my Burlington people? Okay, I see you. I know you.
But we are talking three songs from each playlist for both of the books, for Night's Edge and First Light.
So excited. Yeah. Thank you for also like being down to do an episode in this format, because I'm like, oh my gosh, she like Stephanie has the coolest taste in music. I wish I could like go to a music festival with this girl. Like we gotta talk playlists. We gotta talk about these songs.
I'm very flattered. What was your relationship to music?
I grew up writing songs, playing piano, singing. You know, I think there was a while there that I thought I was going to go to like a music conservatory and become like a singer-songwriter. It was a huge, huge part of my life. I was writing, you know, a lot of like pop and indie rock songs all through my teenage years. I like had a band at one point. It was really fun, but I kind of like, I got to this point, what, like 17, 18 years old, graduating high school, deciding what to do with the rest of my life. And I was also a playwright and writing a lot of short fiction. So I could have gone either way. I was very passionate about both. And I ended up, I don't know, just kind of letting go of music as a career option. I think I kind of got intimidated by the idea of like going to music school. I was like really crappy at music theory. I learned a lot of things by ear. And I just kind of got, I got a little ick. So, and the industry was also just being very ick to me as a young woman, for reasons that we, you know, can all surmise. So yeah, that's kind of, so now I'm just like an appreciator and a lover of all great songwriting. But it is not my thing anymore. That being said, like, if you take me to karaoke, like I will sing all night. I'm so annoying. Yeah.
I love that. So Jade has, you have some background for Jade then.
Yes. And her band Landshark, which is like, it's kind of her. It's like Jade has a band, but like she is Landshark. And so, yeah, I in the sequel First Light, she is still continuing to tour. And she has a tour called the Dagger Stabs Back Tour. And there's a scene in First Light. I don't want to give too much away, but she does sing a song. And I wrote the lyrics to that song. And that was really, really fun.
That's exciting. Oh, it reminds me when I was reading Night's Edge and they go to that music festival in the desert. It was reminding me of Queen of the Damned. And I was like, double vampire, vampire music properties.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I have so much anxiety when I go to shows, when I go to festivals, like the Cloak and Dagger sequence was just all of my worst nightmares come to life, like, which are also informed, unfortunately, by very real things that have happened in our world at shows like this. You know, it's stuff I think about every time I go to a show. I'm like, where are the exits? Where did I park? Who's my emergency contact? What do I do if I get too drunk? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Anyway,
as an anxious girly, I fully understand.
I think anxious girlies make the best horror writers also. And I think it also like stands to reason why you love the genre so much. Just like, oh, yeah, that could totally happen. Terrifying. I know. I'm prepared for it, though.
Adding to my list of things to worry about, and now adding, yeah, to my mental checklist of things. Yeah, I have never related to the horror movie character that is like flippant or joking.
Or like someone who's just like, guys, it's fine. We're just like living in a horror movie. Ha ha. Like, ooh, is there a ghost? It's like, yes, yeah. And you will be the first person that it tears to shreds. Like, shut up. Stop being self-referential. You're going to die.
Yeah. It's always the like mocking person.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you don't want to be that person.
Well, should we get into some songs?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, how I wish we could play them in the background. I'm sure there's some like licensing silliness that goes down, which is a-okay. What we'll do is like I'll post the links to all of this, like, you know, when I share it and in the show notes, and you can listen along at home. So the first song that I flagged on my Night's Edge playlist is a cover of Dancing in the Dark by Lucy Dacus, who I know you're a big fan of as well. And this is, I don't even know when she recorded this. It's pretty old. I discovered it like in like 2020. This is not your dad's Dancing in the Dark. you know, she has that really beautiful, silky smooth alto that just like she reinterprets the lyrics in such a whole new way that just the melancholy of the song comes through in a through a very like feminist lens as well. I don't know. It's this is what I love about cover songs is they just, when it's done right, it's not about reinterpreting the style or like the instrumentation. It's about like putting it through the filter of their life experiences. And it really spoke to me. And to me, I'm like, oh, listen to these lyrics, which they're lyrics that we all know, but said through her, from her mouth, feel like they're about these characters. Like,
yeah,
women trapped in this codependent, gruesome, like nighttime ritual. And just daring to dream of something better. Like, I get up in the evening. I ain't got nothing to say. I come home in the morning. I go to bed feeling the same way. Like, tell me that's not about a vampire. I don't know.
Yeah.
So that's my first pick. Highly recommend that cover, especially if you're a Lucy or a Boy Genius fan already.
Absolutely. Now Grammy Award winner.
Grammy Award Lucy Dacus. Lucy Dacus. Bless her. Oh, my God. Just the coolest. I can't.
Just glad she got her flowers. All of them.
Oh, I know. I know. Have you seen her or Boy Genius play live?
Yeah.
Did you see them this past year?
Yes.
So special.
Yeah, for the record. And they played songs from their EP. It was so packed.
Yeah.
Like, I was in the very back, but it was still so special. And they closed it out with Not Strong Enough, and just like jumping with a sea of people screaming Always an Angel, Never a God was an experience.
It's a religious experience.
It is. Yeah. It truly was.
I went to the Hollywood Bowl show on Halloween where like Dave Grohl came in and played Satanist with them on the drums. And like then they sang each other's solo stuff. So like Phoebe sang Night Shift and Julian sang Motion Sickness. It was like insane. Unforgettable night.
I saw people posting about it. That's incredible.
I hope that they filmed that show and like someday it'll come out on HBO or something like that. It's just, it was so incredible. Yeah, so okay, so my second song, because I could talk about Lucy all day, but you know, you did that already.
There's always more to say, but
my second song on the Night's Edge playlist is a song by Beach House called Wild. I love Beach House. I've been listening to them since I was like in college, and they're just the dream pop synth pop vibes that I will ride into the sunset forever and ever. I love this song. It's so dreamy, and the lyrics really also again speak to the characters. Like the opening lyrics of this song are, my mother said to me that I would get in trouble. You know, tells you everything you need to know. Mia's just been like living in this constructed world of paranoia that revolves around her mother's condition, and yeah, she thinks everything's going to get them killed, everything's going to get them in trouble. And she's not wrong. The stakes are extremely high. But the I just love like the production of this song is just like so romantic and just syrupy, and it just makes you want to like twirl around on your tiptoes in the middle of the street, and like, I don't know, it's to me it also like, you know, when I was talking about, oh, what does Landshark sound like? Like, what are some of Jade's influences as an artist? And I'm like, I'll bet she likes Beach House. I think Landshark goes a little harder than Beach House, but like, she's influenced by them. She can get into it. And I feel like this song, I think about this song in that scene in Night's Edge where Mia's like walking home from the Starbucks when the heat lightning's in the sky. And realizing how she actually feels about this girl. It's, yeah. So that fits really nicely into that moment in my head.
I listened to it when you put it on the dock, and it absolutely fits that. It has like a very dreamy in love, like walking on air.
Yeah.
Synth kind of quality.
Yeah, and there are a couple songs like that on the playlist. I feel like that's like what their love sounds like to me. And then the third song I picked from the Night's Edge playlist is like a love song in the complete opposite direction. This song, I don't know. I don't even remember how I came across this song. I think it was like Spotify just threw it on a mix of mine at one point based on my other listening. I like how they do that. But this song is by Sky Ferreira, and it's called Downhill Lullaby. And it is like the drama in this track is just pitch black. And it is, oh my God, it's this beautiful, twisted track that I think is just like filled with so much regret and like sexual self-loathing. You know, to me, it like definitely makes me think of Izzy and like how she hates herself for continuing to love this man who ruined her life. And the way, you know, there's a lot going on in this song, lyrically, musically. You know, there's this like, it kind of feels like this lush, angry, like funeral march almost, which is what I think of when I think of her, that she's just this tragically beautiful, wounded, fucked up woman who has ruined her. Like she, the thing about her is like she herself is a victim of, you know, intimate partner violence. And I never like want to lose sight of that. But at the same time, like, yeah, she's destroyed her daughter's life. You know, two things can be true at once with her. So this is how I think she feels about herself. And if you listen to the song, I think, you know, I hope anyway that that will click. Because I have a lot of thoughts and feelings about her as a character that, you know, we really get into in First Light. And I also wrote a short story about her point of view that is going to come out next month. Yeah, so I have a lot to say about her. She's not really gone.
I'm glad to hear that. She was a fascinating character. I mean, the relationship in itself, that main relationship with Mia and Izzy, was so interesting and multifaceted. And it was because of the nuance in Izzy, where you could see where she was coming from and that she was hurt, and that is, you know, that hurt was hurting other people and putting, you know, excess responsibility on Mia.
You know, we'll talk about this in a little bit, because there's another track that, you know, touches on this a lot too. But to me, like, this was a vampire story about like vanquishing generational trauma also.
Yeah.
You know, because you talk about like Izzy is someone who definitely experienced like religious trauma as well. And that's hinted at in Night's Edge. And, you know, later on we get more into it as well. And yeah, just passing it on, and, you know, the pain of what she went through with this man she thought she could trust, passing that on to her daughter, who then can't trust anyone. You know, like, who is the cycle breaker in that family? Hopefully Mia, but not yet, you know.
I know I did a Canva Instagram graphic with like song lyrics and books for like sad girl sad girl lyrics. I did do one for Night's Edge.
Yeah.
It was First Love, Late Spring by Mitski.
Yes. Oh, it's a great song. Yeah.
Yeah, and specifically, And I Was So Young When I Behaved, 25. Oof. And now I find I've grown into a tall child.
Yeah. Oh, that's incredible. Yeah. That will go in the show notes as well. That's our like honorary mention, because that is not on this playlist and it should have been. Gross oversight by me. But you picked it up.
Are we ready to move into First Light songs?
That's why it's so, yeah, that's why this is so fun, and why I loved that other episode that you did. You know, I mean, I guess this is gonna post later, but to me, I'm like, oh, the Read Alike song episode was like last week. Yeah. Okay. So this This playlist, it's funny because I labeled this playlist First Light All the Songs, because I at one point had two different playlists for it, because it was originally like, I mean, it still is divided into two parts. To me, there's a really like clear delineation like of an act one and act two in that book. But we ended up taking out the part two of it all. But to me, it's still kind of like two separate things. But then I combine them. So that's why that still says all the songs. There used to be two. So the first song on this playlist that I picked is maybe sort of like an obvious sounding choice if you have read it. But it's still really fun. And it's the song Pills by St. Vincent, a classic. And in the sequel, these pills called, known on the street as Daylights, are a medication that allows Sarahs to be exposed to sunlight for 4 to 6 hours at a time. And it's like this huge, at the beginning of the book, it's like this huge stride that's made in the medical community that just completely screws everything up, because the pills quickly become this like very hot commodity, very scarce. You know, just kind of, there's a huge black market for them. And especially among like the free Sarahs who are trying to hide in plain sight and also like, you know, doing some bad shit, like being terrorists, the daylights are essential. They need them to move around. So the pills end up becoming like the most important plot device, I think, in the whole duology. Just without saying too much, like if you've read the whole book, you will know why I'm saying that.
I think I saw Kaylee's artwork about the daylight pills. So I knew that. And then listening to the song, I'm like, okay, that must be what it's in reference to.
Yeah, we have these stickers that my buddy Kaylee made for like a pre-order campaign for people who are listening who haven't seen them, but they are this sticker that has like an overturned bottle of pills on them with a bunch of blood, and it says, ask your doctor if daylights are right for you. I love it. They're so fun. But people don't get it yet, but yeah, when they read the book later, they'll get it. So it's a preemptive joke. So
love that. I love that song.
Yeah, I love that whole album. It's a keeper. I had a couple of more like St. Vincent. There are a couple of St. Vincent songs like on both of these playlists. So it was hard to choose just one. But yeah.
That seems like a good choice if you have to choose just one.
If I had to choose. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The next song on the First Light playlist, it's an oldie, it's an oddball choice, but it's Brain Damage by Pink Floyd. Again, maybe if you've read the book, this one might feel a little obvious, but like to me, it was just kind of like full of all these little Easter eggs. I think so. It kind of happened that I subliminally sort of referenced this song in one of the scenes I was writing. I said something about like, she's going to drag me to the dark side of the moon or something like that is what it says. And I was like, oh, why is that in my head? Oh, it's because I was just listening to this. And then, you know, just it's just this creepy, unsteady, like synth driven song. I mean, with all that like manic laughter in the background, just like classic Pink Floyd. And just like there's this one scene now that I think of when I hear that song that's in First Light, that's like the big, big violent turning point of the story. Yeah, this song is everything when I think of that. And I think, yeah, it's actually like one of the only classic rock songs that is on this playlist. But it just, I don't know, it clicked.
If it fits the vibe, it fits the vibe.
Yeah, yeah. I was in high school, and I was in this theater group that was also like doing like staged readings of like certain like concept rock albums. It was very cool and very weird. And we did The Who's Tommy, and then the following year they did The Wall by Pink Floyd, and like a bunch of like, we were like playing and singing it and like acting it out. It was bizarre that our drama teachers let us do this, but they did. And so that was like my first intro to Pink Floyd and their music. And then, you know, so that was a classic example of like me walking in and saying to my dad, like, "Dad, have you heard Dark Side of the Moon?" And my dad just looking at me like, "Sit down." And now we have like, you know, our kids' generation being like, "Mom, do you know about Nirvana?"
Yeah.
And I'm like, that is the way my dad felt, I'm sure.
You know what? He was probably so excited, though. It sounds like it.
Yeah.
But now you guys have a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, oh, now we can talk about this. I think I did the same thing with Fleetwood Mac. I was like, do you know about Stevie Nicks? Do you know?
It's like, do I ever?
Yeah. And so, okay. So my number three on the First Light playlist, and this is at the end of the playlist. This is, I think, the second to last song. And it was definitely, I think this was my like number two on my top five Spotify Wrapped of 2023 for a good reason, because I think I listened to this just on a loop while I was writing like the final 40 pages of this book. So this is Letter to an Old Poet by Boy Genius. And I had a really hard time choosing between this song and I Know the End, Phoebe Bridgers' song, which I know you have said is a big one for you.
Yeah.
I think that was actually my number one.
I think it was, because I messaged you and I was like, number one, buddies.
Yeah. So that was, I think, my number one. I think this was like my number two. Yeah. I picked this one as my third, because in sum, I think it's just like one of the most honest songs about an emotionally abusive person. That moment where you realize it's just this like heart-wrenching description of when you see an abusive partner for who they really are and you finally decide to like put yourself first. These lyrics just are so simple and just, you know, go through your heart and out your back. And like, I don't know, like, whether or not you know anything about like Phoebe Bridgers or her relationships, like, it doesn't even matter if you know where it's coming from for her personally, because like, I was just really able to transpose A, my own experiences in that situation, and then B, the experiences of these characters, which is, you know, one of the beautiful things about their songwriting is like, it feels so personal to them, but then you as the listener can completely transport yourself and be there too without having to know what happened to them. And yeah, I think like, I love this song because this song is for Mia about Izzy. And it's also for Izzy about Devin, because these books, you know, like I was saying earlier, like they're about overcoming the literal horror of generational trauma. And like that for me is the whole, that is the meat of this story. That's like, this is the dramatic triangle of these characters. This song fits it perfectly. And then you also have like that perfect, perfect turning point in the song where she says, "But you're not special, you're evil." And again, like, I'm trying to avoid anything that walks the spoiler tightrope, but I think if you know, you know.
I mean, it's a great song, and coming to terms with that, and yet telling the person like, you are patting yourself on the back because you've never laid a hand on me.
Yeah,
but there's so much more to it than that.
Yeah, she says, "You think you're a good person because you won't punch me in the stomach."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was she did when she sang that one at the Hollywood Bowl show that I was at. She kind of did this thing where they lit up this section of the stage that was, you know, kind of dipped into the audience, like dipped into the floor section, and she just like, they dimmed the lights in the back in the bowl, and then she just came out in front just right there and just sang it in the middle of the audience. And she had said, you know, like, "Oh my God, this is the most cathartic experience, getting to just like do this in the middle of all of you." And you could really feel it. It was really powerful.
You made me feel like an equal, but I'm better than you. You should know that by now.
You should know that by now. Ugh. I would, like, I could do, like, I if I were, like, auditioning for, like, drama school, I would, like, stand up and do this, like a Shakespearean monologue.
My God, that would be perfect. Like, wow, where's that from? You haven't heard of it. Oh my God. Well, such good song choices. This has made me extremely excited to dig into First Light.
Yay. I'm excited too. And just getting to share these songs and this story, like, with everybody finally. I wrote this book like 2.5 years ago now. Like, it's crazy to me. It's now 2024 and I've been living with these characters since 2020.
Oh, wow.
And finally getting to, yeah, just share the end of the whole story cycle with all of you is just so special to me. And I don't know, the music was just a huge part of it. And I think, like, if you listen to all the songs, you'll hopefully kind of just tap into where my brain was these past 2 years. And it might, I don't know, and it might not be where you want to be, and that's okay. It's not sad girl horror for nothing.
I think people are excited.
I hope so. Excited to be sad at all times.
So that is a vibe. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, one of the traditions on this podcast is to talk about our chilling obsessions. So what have you been enjoying lately?
So right now, I would say, like, okay, my chilling obsession is a long-running obsession. My chilling obsession is alien abductions. And you, the other day, I was listening to an episode that you did where you were talking about unsolved mysteries.
Yes.
And you were saying, like, oh, I love the supernatural episodes of unsolved mysteries. And I was like, yes, and the supernatural episodes about alien abductions. Those mm-hmm. Those have stuck with me forever. Lifetime obsession. And actually right now I'm writing a new book that, like, has to do with a bunch of people who have had an abduction experience that may or may not have been real. Very inspired by my chilling obsession. But, like, when I was little, like, there was this kid in my class who he was always just, like, the cool guy, and he would always, like, he was, like, the one who told me about, like, Bloody Mary, and, you know, he was the urban myth guy, and he, when we were, like, 7 years old, was, like, at night, when you see a weird light go across your bedroom wall, that's not a car. That's a UFO. No sleep for months.
The way that would have scarred me as a child.
That was, like, what he did. But, like, we were friends because I kept coming back for more. Because I would be like, yeah. I hate you. Don't talk about that stuff. Say more.
So, little horror girly from the start.
Yeah, from the start. Again, like, having anxiety is what makes us good at this job. But, like, and now as an adult, like, I spend a lot of time thinking about, like, the Fermi paradox, which is, like, if indeed there is intelligent life, why haven't they contacted us? And it's all of the reasons why that might be.
Why haven't we found it yet?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's either they don't want to be found or they have technology that is too far, advanced that we can't even comprehend it with our stupid little brains, or they were out there and then they destroyed themselves, which, you know, hard possibility. Yeah. And then, like, the Tom DeLonge of it all. Oh my God.
I gotta go watch a alien episode of Unsolved Mysteries. I do love that they always interview someone who seems credible, like, to add credibility. It's like, this guy worked at IBM for 15 years. He's a logic guy. He wouldn't make this up. My dad worked
at IBM for 15 years. Like, and now we're going to interview Pat Caron. What do you think about the aliens? Just, so I don't know. I work in marketing. Yeah. I think like there was, oh my God, there was this trial that was going on in Mexico, I think last year, where they had like the mummy of an alien and they brought it into like the courtroom in Mexico. And I was watching like a live stream of it. And, you know, then everybody started being like, it's fake. You know, it's fake, right? I'm like, don't ruin this for me. They brought in a mummy.
I want to believe.
I was just going to say that. Like, I want to believe. Yeah. So it's, listen, like, it's been in my DNA for a long, long time. It is my chilling obsession. And I am just really hoping I actually finish this book and I can, like, finally have an outlet for all of this insanity that I've been bottling up since I was 7 years old and got scared of UFOs for the first time.
I need this novel. I don't know. I think I don't know if I said it on a TikTok or an episode. I think it was a TikTok, but there's like certain subgenres of horror that I don't see a lot of horror novels. And like alien abduction was one where I'm like, I don't see a lot in this pocket.
Well, I think it can be tricky because it's alien abductions are kind of silly. Like, yeah. It is my chilling obsession. Yes, I want to believe. But also, like, yeah, you get in, you know, they walk that fine line between fantasy and reality. Like, you know, you have a vampire book and you're like, well, yeah, there are no vampires. There are no werewolves. But that's why I think, like, I'm hoping, knock on wood, that, like, this is going to work because one of the things I really enjoy doing is taking something outlandish and really like grounding it very, very hard. So that was what we did with Night's Edge. And I'm just hoping that it works with the aliens too. It's more about like the psychological connection that forms between people who have had the same bizarre otherworldly experience. And it's also about this idea of like, what if you had an experience that just cracked your world wide open and nobody believed you? And that's a metaphor for a lot of things.
That sounds fascinating. I will say I keep thinking of the Kate McKinnon smoking sketch.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
where she's being interviewed. It's just like several people who've like experienced an alien abduction. And it's a recurring character for her.
Oh, it is. I mean, like, I'm going to have to find a way to, like, pay homage to that in some way. Yeah, I mean, it's like, what is the dramatic version of that character?
And everyone is like, I saw this beautiful white light and I was just filled with warmth and happiness. And it pans to Kate McKinnon saying, like, that was not my experience at all.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I have to rewatch all of those and just like drop little breadcrumbs, little Easter eggs that refer to it. Oh man. And also like, well, you know, it makes me think of also Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where it kind of is like the serious version of that Kate McKinnon character. Like when he's building the thing out of the mashed potatoes and stuff, like it's kooky, but it's meant to be like,
yeah.
God, how terrifying.
You got to just take it seriously and commit to the bit.
It commits to the bit. And it's funny because I don't know if it's a horror novel with a capital H. It remains to be seen. I don't know if I know what I'm writing, but I'm writing something and aliens are a part of it. So you heard it here first.
Nice. All right. Well, the second tradition we have on the podcast on this already musical episode is to ask our guests for a final girl song.
Yes. And this is the moment I've been waiting for ever since I replied to your Instagram being like, I'll tell you if you let me come on your show. My final girl song is Gold Dust Woman by Fleetwood Mac. Simply because, I mean, there is nothing in my mind that like screams final girl more than just like I imagine just this woman in a blood-soaked cloak just like traipsing across the desert and the lyrics just like Can you, she made, did she make you cry, make you break down, shatter your illusions of love? Is it over now? Do you know how to pick up the pieces and go home? And she's going home. And who knows what she's left in her wake? Who knows what she had to go through to get home? And that is just the image I have whenever I hear that song. And so I'm like, I want to walk away from a burning building that has all of my enemies inside of it, like as that song is playing. That's the one.
Stevie Nicks absolutely has final girl energy.
Yeah. She, I mean, if you think about, I mean, again, this is like, Dad, have you heard of Fleetwood Mac? Think about them as a group. I mean, she's the one. Like, she, mm-hmm. that was a group full of drama and heartache and toxicity. And she was like, I'm just going to transcend all of this. And I will be your final girl. She's still out there. And yeah. she's, I saw her on tour like 2 years ago. She's still twirling. She's still got it.
That's so cool.
That's
a little
that's
jealous.
The goal. Yeah. Yeah. And she's still wearing like the big platform boots. And like you watch her twirling and you're like, is someone spotting her? Is she going to be okay? And of course she's okay. She's been
she's
doing
Stevie
this
Nicks.
Before we were born. Yeah. Like relax. She can twirl.
I know I've mentioned on the podcast that in middle school, I did try to rebrand as a Stevie because I discovered that Stevie Nicks' name is Stephanie. And I'm like, hello, yeah. why am I not harnessing this? Send this power. Unfortunately, no one went along with it except for like my best friend who like still calls me Stevie. I'm like, thank you. I have one.
You know, all you need is one wonderful, loving person who commits to the bit with you. I love yeah. that. I'll call you Stevie starting right now.
Thank you so much. I just feel like the thing where you've like invested too much time or like too much sunk cost. At this it's a sunk cost at this point. I've lived so long as this and I'm just, it's fine.
I had a similar experience where like I am Liz, but my full name is Elizabeth, and I didn't like going by Liz for a while when I was younger, and I wanted a cool nickname, and I didn't want to be Liz or Beth or Betsy, and there were so many Elizabeths in my school, so I asked if people could start calling me Bet, B-E-T. I thought okay. that was so cool. Yeah. Not only did no one commit to it, but then this one really mean boy just started calling me Bette Midler, and he would follow me around school being like, yo, Midler, what you doing, Midler? And it was so fucking weird. And now looking back, I'm like, thank you, sir. She's an icon. Mm-hmm. I appreciate you. But at the time, I was so humiliated.
You're like, that's so not drunk. The vibe I was going that's for. I was going for edgy, cool.
Yeah, I'm not going for Wind Beneath My Wings here, but... Now I'm like, you know, I've seen Hocus Pocus. I know.
She's an icon.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on here, talking music and First Light and Night's Edge.
Thank you for having me. This was amazing. I had so much fun.
This was so fun. Yeah. Where can people find you online?
People can find me mostly on Instagram. I'm there. The most often it's just Liz Karen, my full name. I also have threads that I've been using and finding it delightful. Same username. I don't have Twitter anymore. and I have a Patreon that I am in the process of kind of like relaunching, rebranding, because I was moving all my stuff over from Substack after all that like drama. But soon, like all the short stories and other content that was on my Substack is going to move to my Patreon, so you can find me there. And oh, cool. I have another Night's Edge short story coming out in about a month, March 12th, I think it's coming, and that'll be available on Reactor. So I don't know when this is going to post, but that's also coming.
All right. Well, thank you again.
Thank you so much. I had the best time.
Books in the Freezer is a bi-weekly podcast. We post episodes every other Tuesday. You can find us on Instagram, Threads, and TikTok at Books in the Freezer, or you can send us an email at booksinthefreezer@gmail.com. Show notes for this episode and all previous episodes can be found at booksinthefreezer.com, where I will put the links to the playlist Liz Karen was talking about for both books. And you know what else is on the show notes is links to our TeePublic shop, where you can get some merch. There are a few designs, and then you can choose to order those designs a few different ways, you know, shirts, sweaters, onesies, mugs, stickers. So a few things to choose from there. Like, we have a shirt that says freezer worthy. We have, of course, a classic podcast logo. And of course, we have a Meaty Plops shirt. Someone did buy it. And please let me know who you are, because I love that. So yeah, that's on the show notes at booksinthefreezer.com if you would like to check out some merch. The show notes also has a few other ways you can support the podcast, including affiliate links, things like Libro FM and Fangoria, where you can check that out, and any purchases you make through that link help out the podcast. You can also check out the podcast Patreon at patreon.com/booksinthefreezer, but of course there is a link to that from the show notes as well. And if you're looking for a free way to show your support for the podcast, there are many ways to do that. Sharing the podcast on social media and just interacting. If you have Spotify, interacting with the Q&A at the end of the episode, leaving a rating. If you listen to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, I'm sure you get told by every podcast, but rating and reviewing is huge and really helps the podcast gain more visibility. It helps it climb up the podcast charts. So thank you so much to all of you who have taken time to do that. I am Stephanie Gagne. Thank you so much for listening, and see you next time on Books in the Freezer.